You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Rest in peace, Jamal Murray. I'm exaggerating, of course, but it feels appropriate on a jubilant night for the Rockets, punctuated late in the first half by James Harden dropping Jamal Murray on a behind-the-back move. Then somehow, after Murray, unlike Wes Johnson a year ago in the immediate comparison that I can think of, got back up to contest the shot. Good for Jamal, a near all-star level player this season, for showing some pride. And somehow, despite him showing that tenacity, Harden finishing a four-point play, making the three after the move, and then hitting the free throw after drawing the contact. It's James Harden's league, and everyone else is just living in it. With that, welcome in to another happy post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. I said after Saturday night's loss in Portland that to me, even though it wasn't a back-to-back, it felt like a schedule loss for the Rockets. The third in four nights on the road, no Chris Paul, no Eric Gordon. They fought hard, just had a slow first half, down by 13. It felt like just a bit of a hangover after the emotional win at Golden State, culminated with the physical toll of all the mileage, the injuries. But in case you had any doubt, Monday against the West number one, currently the Denver Nuggets, certainly proved it. The Rockets, even without CP3 and Eric Gordon, winning by double digits, 125-113 over the Nuggets at Toyota Center. It's the Rockets' 12th win in the past 14 games. It's their 10th straight at home. They set records all over the place. PJ Tucker, a career-high 7 made threes. The Rockets made 22 of 47 as a team. Clint Capella, a career-high 31 points, also had 9 rebounds, 13 of 18 shooting. Even though Nikola Jokic is one heck of a player for Denver, he's no match on the defensive end for Clint Capella. And as far as the matchup in particular, it's the Rockets' 9th consecutive win over the Nuggets, dating back to now 3 seasons. So it doesn't matter whether it's in Denver, in Houston, the Rockets, just a rough matchup for this iteration of the Nuggets. And that's particularly useful right now. More on that in a bit as we move our way through our usual 3 points recap. We'll also touch on the news that our Sunday show with David Wiener predicted, the Michael Carter-Williams trade to Chicago, although MCW immediately released by the Bulls. Again, more on that in a bit. But as far as this 9-game winning streak against the Nuggets, yeah, it's important because with them as the current number one in the Western Conference, they're certainly not the pushover they were in prior years when they were close to the playoffs but ultimately didn't get in. No, at this point, 26-12, even with the loss, they're a good team. They're someone you could see down the road in April and May. And so, yes, it's important that you're able to match up this well against them. And to me, that's where this starts, because you had lots of great individual stat lines. Gerald Green off the bench, 21 points, 6 of 10 made threes. PJ Tucker mentioned his career best, 7 made threes. But at the end of the day, it goes back to James Harden, Clint Capella, the foundation. And even without Clint Capella and Eric Gordon, I don't think those two were missed as much tonight. Now, there was some encouraging signs. Eric Gordon, we'll see. They're going to reevaluate him at the end of the week. We did see for the first time since his hamstring injury, Chris Paul going through a pregame shooting workout before. And honestly, he looked better than what I expected. He was moving around very well, certainly shooting very well. I posted that on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose. But as far as this matchup, Rockets-Nuggets, honestly, they didn't even need them. And that's quite a statement, considering that's a team that's been number one in the West for the past few weeks. But the reason, in my opinion, that the Nuggets have so much trouble with the Rockets, it's a combination of two things. Number one, on the interior, for all of Nikola Jokic's strengths, he's a fantastic passer, he's a behemoth, he has so much touch, he's so diverse offensively. He is not as athletic as Clint Capella, and when you combine that with Capella's work ethic, his intelligence, and his movement off the ball, he has a way of exposing that lack of athleticism to where Denver has to compensate. And then on the perimeter, The Nuggets have a lot of decent defenders, but no one that you can point to and say, hey, this is the guy that I can trust to put on James Harden. Now, not that there's such a thing as a Harden stopper in the entire NBA. Harden's been on a ridiculous 40-plus point scoring binge for the last 12, 13 games or so. So clearly, there's no one that you can put on him and say, wow, I'm going to shut Harden down. But with the Nuggets, it's difficult to deny penetration. We heard from Michael Malone, the Nuggets coach, before the game that he felt that the best they could do was throw him different looks. Well, the thing is, that's smart in theory with most players, but with Harden, whose IQ is off the charts, even if you give him different looks, he can figure it out. There's not even a lag of a couple of minutes. So it felt like from quarter to quarter, there was big variance. In the first quarter, he had just 4 points, and it felt like the Rockets, or the Nuggets, that is, were daring the Rockets to do something besides their usual isolation ball with Harden. They were going to make someone else make those shots. Okay, well, PJ Tucker got going from three, hit a couple not just from the corners, but what was important was that he made a couple from above the break and the top of the key, which made the Nuggets respect him all over the floor. Also, Clint Capella got going, I believe, of his 31 points, 19 came in the first quarter and a half. So late in the second quarter, when Harden was sitting on just 4 or 6 points, they decided to stop doubling and see what they could do if they're going to take away the shooters, and then force Harden to beat them, which he promptly did. He had the iconic play over Jamal Murray, which I mentioned leading off the top, the behind-the-back move, which dropped Murray, and then unlike Wes Johnson a year ago, Murray got off the deck only to foul Harden on the ensuing three, which Harden made, and then he followed with the free throw. Then, shortly after, on I believe the next trip down the floor, Harden hit a 27-footer, 7 points in under a minute. So, if they doubled Harden, the shooters were ready and they were able to make those shots. And if they left Harden in isolation, well, James does what he does to nearly everyone in isolation. So even though James did not continue his 35-point and 5-assist streak that's been going on for so long, much less get to 40, well, he'll be okay with 32 points. Number one, because the Rockets won the game. And secondly, because he had 14 assists. And there were certain stretches in the game where the Nuggets seemed compelled to take away Harden as a scorer. Okay, so he found the shooters, and guys like PJ Tucker and Gerald Green, to their credit, made the shots. I thought on the other end of the floor, the Rockets competed very hard defensively as well. Nuggets made just 7 of their 29 threes. I thought the Rockets scrambled very, very well, especially out of transition sequences where the Nuggets, they're so deep, they have so many options. I thought the Rockets did a good job of contesting all night long. No, it wasn't a perfect game. The Rockets were out-rebounded 46-34. The Nuggets, the league's top offensive rebounding team. The Rockets near the bottom of the league in defensive rebounding, which we've covered ad nauseum on this podcast throughout the year. So it wasn't a perfect matchup, despite all the advantages, and the Rockets having won 9 in a row now over Denver the last 3 years. But fortunately, the Rockets made enough threes, 22 of 47, to where going minus 12 on the glass ultimately didn't matter tonight. And to some degree, I do think it reflects that they've been basically going through a gauntlet the last couple of weeks. No Chris Paul, no Eric Gordon, a tough schedule in this stretch. There have been nothing close to a Phoenix, an Atlanta, a Cleveland, which, by the way, looms on Friday. So the Rockets have had to go balls to the wall, pardon the expression, to try and just grind through every single game. The good news is that is almost over. Now tonight, you face the West number one team. On Wednesday night, you face the East number one team, and that's Milwaukee. And it's the culmination of a very difficult stretch for the Rockets. The good news is that even though this stretch has been incredibly difficult, and they have not had Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, somehow they've won 12 of 14, and of course, somehow, well, we know it's because James Harden, the reigning MVP, is even better than before, making his case to clearly be this two-time MVP back-to-back, although Wednesday will be a showdown. I'm sure that'll get James's juices flowing going up against Giannis, the Greek freak at Toyota Center. By the way, Rockets have won 10 in a row now at home, so if the environment is worthy, which it should be, of two top MVP candidates, then the Rockets, based on their play of late at home, it should put them in a good spot. But to get back to the theme of the schedule, this has been difficult, but because Harden has played so well, even with the tough schedule, even with Chris Paul and Eric Gordon being out, the Rockets have been winning these games. Well, you've only got one more Wednesday against Milwaukee. And even if you lose that, you know, you lose that, it's 23-17, whatever. I mean, at that point, 23-17 is still solid. Now, hopefully they win the game. They're certainly capable of doing so. But if you had asked me when Chris Paul went out 7 games ago, I would have been pleased to be around 500 at this point. And it's, of course, is a reflection of how insanely well that James Harden has played. But then after Wednesday against Milwaukee, Cleveland, Orlando, Memphis, Brooklyn, the Lakers, we'll see if LeBron James is back by then, got one tough game at Philly, then the Knicks. It's not going to be a difficult schedule over the next six or seven games, so you can really make some hay. Now, it's not guaranteed. I think part of the success of the Rockets of late, I think the competitive juices have been flowing with so many high-profile matchups, the Thunder on Christmas, the Celtics on the national TV Thursday game, the Warriors, the Revenge Factory, the Western Conference Finals rematch. So they're going to have to prove that they can continue this level of play against weaker competition. And with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, neither of them appearing at least imminently back, it's not like the Rockets are just going to be overwhelmingly talented, although they will have James Harden. So that will present its own set of challenges. But at this point, even though I do think some of the fatigue issues that were there Saturday in Portland are still present, again, the Rockets were minus 12 on the glass. It just happens that Denver, especially at home, is a more friendly matchup than Portland on the road. The good news is that the gauntlet that is at least in part responsible for some of the fatigue issues, that combined with the roster limitations, it's almost over. That doesn't guarantee that everything's going to continue, but at least on paper, yeah, with the Rockets at 23-16 and the schedule about to lighten up and Chris Paul and Eric Gordon not too far away from returning, in my opinion, as I've said for a while, even though we're not even at the halfway point of the year, to me, it's time to buy in. It's the most optimistic that I've been about them all season long. It feels like I say that about every other podcast right now. And even though, again, we're not even to the halfway point, we'll be that after Friday's game at home against Cleveland, wrapping up this current three-game homestand. To me, we've seen enough of sample size now, the Rockets having won 12 of 14, that I am fully buying in on where this Rockets team is at right now in the regular season and going forward. Now, beyond the regular season, we'll see what happens with matchups, but as I'll explain on the other side, that's another reason why Monday's win over Denver is so encouraging, at least to me. Jumping back into the program, our recap of Monday evening's 125-113 win by the Rockets over the Nuggets. It's their ninth straight win over the Nuggets over the past three seasons. Rockets improved to 23-16. Nuggets, number one in the West, they fall to 26-12. The Rockets just 3.5 games behind them in the standings. They've also clinched at least a split in the season series as far as potential tiebreaker goes. So yeah, Nuggets, objects in your rearview mirror are a bit closer than they might appear at first glance. The Rockets, not just 12-14, but 10 in a row at home, 9 in a row over Denver, just playing incredibly well. Clint Capella, career high, 31 points, 9 rebounds. James Harden, 32-14. PJ Tucker, a career high, 7 made threes. Just a great offensive night for the Rockets against the West number one team. And the Rockets right now, they're number 4 in the Western Conference standings, but they are number 4 with a bullet. They continue to climb. And at this point, if the standings were to stay this way, I can't imagine that the Nuggets would be very excited at all to see the Rockets looming as their potential second-round opponent. Now, I don't think it's going to continue that way. For starters, the Nuggets, while I think they're a very good team, I'd be surprised if they're number one. I don't think they've improved so much to go from a team that missed the playoffs a year ago to number one all season long. I think ultimately they settle into the middle of the pack. And who knows, with the Rockets playing like they are right now, and if Chris Paul and Eric Gordon get back, maybe the Rockets make a run at being the number one again. We'll have to wait and see. Again, they're only 3.5 games back as we record this Monday night of the Nuggets for that number one spot. Currently, the Rockets, 23-16, tied for the fourth spot. But where this is really important to me, no matter the Rockets, if they're the 4, the 1, the Nuggets, the 1, the 4, or any other combination in between, really 1 through 8, there's not a ton of separation. So with the Western Conference, as much parity as there is, that's a theme we've discussed all season long, you shouldn't get married to one particular pecking order because a lot can change. Of course, we'll see what happens with injuries, so on and so forth. But where this is really useful, in a Western Conference that has so many good teams, it's good if you are not a guaranteed number one to have matchups that you feel good about. Because for the Rockets last year, they couldn't really pick their matchups. They were so far in front, they were the number one by 7 games over the number 2 Golden State. They just had to sit and wait and see who it was that was ultimately going to be on their side of the bracket, the 8, than who the 4 and 5 would be. And that came down to the final day of the season. And to some degree, teams could control what their matchups would be based on their preference. If you're number 1, that's not something you have to think about unless you just happen to be playing one of those teams late in the season. However, if you're not number one, and for the Rockets, even though they're playing well now, 23-16, they've almost lost, they're within one of their entire loss total a year ago, so clearly they're going to far exceed that. It's not the same team, it's not the same Western Conference, more importantly. I doubt the Rockets have that much separation late in the year as they did a year ago. And, of course, in an ideal world, you'd want home court advantage throughout the playoffs. That's still attainable. That's what the Rockets want, because if you're going to get through the West and especially beat the back-to-back defending champion Warriors, probably the most talented team ever assembled, you want every conceivable margin that you can have to help chip away at their talent advantage. So yes, the Rockets are going to prioritize home court advantage if reasonably possible and if they have health. That said, if they don't have health or if for some reason it doesn't happen, it helps to have matchups that you feel really good about, because if you're not going to be able to get the one, then maybe there is a way that, be it the first round, the second round, whatever it may be, you can position yourself on the Denver side of the bracket because you feel pretty good about the matchup advantages we went through earlier about Jokic, for all of his strengths offensively, not being able to keep up with Capella on the other end with his athleticism and how smart he is, especially without the ball, not really having someone that can counter James Harden on the perimeter. If you feel good about that matchup, then yes, it's helpful. I think there are other matchups, while not quite as friendly as Denver. I think the Rockets feel pretty good about San Antonio, for instance. I don't think that the Spurs have the type of perimeter stopper or interior presence. I think to some degree, the fact that the Rockets own the interior against teams like Denver and San Antonio, at least in terms of scoring. Now, Denver is a very good rebounding team, but the fact that neither of those teams can really match Clint Capella or stop James Harden. Now, I know, you know, you look at James Harden on the night and nearly all of his attempts, 15 of 18, were from behind the arc, but he did probe. It's just when he probed, he collapsed the defense and he kicked it to three-point shooters. Another team that I'd throw in that I think the Rockets feel pretty good about the matchup with would be the Lakers, who the Rockets are 2-0 against this season. I know playoff LeBron is a real thing, but I think the Rockets with P.J. Tucker like their ability to at least match up with him as well as anybody else, and then the youth of the Lakers everywhere else. I think the Rockets feel like that's something they can exploit. So to me, when you look at teams, especially, you know, the Spurs and Lakers right now, they're the 6-8 seed, although we'll see what happens with the Lakers. I know they've lost 3 of 10, but we'll see what happens once LeBron James get back. But with the Nuggets at number 1, and that being another team that appears to be a favorable matchup, that's a really good sign for the Rockets, because while I think they'd be favored over any team that's not the Warriors in the playoffs, at the same time, it's certainly not commanding. I do think the West is better than a year ago, and the Rockets, while you see glimpses to where they might even have more upside than a year ago, I'm certainly not going to go as far as to say that they're as consistent or that a team that's 23-16 is anywhere near a squad that was 65-17 through 82 a year ago. So I do think that while you see glimpses that make you think that the Rockets, as I said last week, might could have a better shot against the Warriors if they're healthy, at the same time, it's not a given when you look at the totality of the evidence that they get through the first two rounds. So if you can't get the number one, that's the main goal. You do want to at least have some control over the process. And of course, you can determine how hard you play. Do you go all out? Do you pull back? But it's nice to have some kind of ace in the hole cards in your back pocket if you're not going to be that number one. And I think we're starting to see, certainly with the Nuggets, I'd throw the Spurs in there as well, maybe the Lakers. But I think we're starting to see the Western Conference playoff teams that we feel like the Rockets match up really, really well with. And that, to me, is useful. It certainly does not guarantee anything, but it's something that is another feather in your cap. Because when the Rockets, it's not just one game out of 82 against the Nuggets. No, this is 9 straight. And against a team that right now, again, 26-12, they're in the loss column, still up by 2 games, clear of the field in the Western Conference. So to have teams up and down the pecking order, it's useful, because if you don't get that number one, yes, you can mix and match. So on top of tonight's game and all the positives we take out of it, Harden, Capella, Tucker, Gerald Green, the collective shooting, 22 made threes, long term, I think there are very useful things that come from being this confident against another playoff team in Denver. So that, to me, is beyond just this one game, what you should really take out of tonight. Now, this will do it as far as our post-game coverage from tonight. That's because our third and final segment coming up, we're going to discuss another aspect of the Rockets, another breaking news item that happened on Monday besides just the game, and that's something that was predicted Sunday on our very show here at Locked On Rockets, the trade of Michael Carter Williams, which frees up a roster spot that we expect the Rockets to use in the very near future. More on that on the other side. So as we conclude Monday's show, which a busy day for the Rockets, they beat the Nuggets 125-113, Clint Capella career high 31 points, 9 boards, James Harden 32 points, 14 assists. The game beating the West current number one team, 9th straight time, Rockets over the Nuggets, 10th straight home win, 12-14 overall, that's sweet enough. But that was not the only thing happening with this basketball team on Monday. Earlier in the day, there was also a piece of off-court news, that being the Rockets trading Michael Carter-Williams to Chicago, as predicted by David Wiener on this very show Sunday night. He didn't say Chicago, but other than that, he pretty much nailed it. Rockets trading Michael Carter-Williams and cash to the Bulls, who immediately waived Michael Carter-Williams, and in effect, the benefit for the Rockets is clearing the roster spot. Now, why would the Rockets trade him and cash? Because with the Rockets being a luxury tax team and the fact that the Bulls are not, by virtue of the Bulls being the team to actually release him, the cash that the Rockets gave the Bulls to temporarily take MCW and then release him was less than the luxury tax hit the Rockets would have taken if they were the team to release him. So it saves the Rockets on the tax, which gives them more flexibility for down the line. And as we saw situations all around the league coming to a head on Monday, the reason it was an inflection point, well, there's two reasons. For starters, around the league, it was a key date because Monday was the date that players had to be released if they didn't, their original teams did not want to commit to their full guarantee, their entire season contract. For players that had partial guarantees, which Michael Carter-Williams did at just $1.2 million, if they were on the roster beyond Monday, they effectively would have been guaranteed the full league minimum. So if you wanted to ditch those guys, Monday was the day in which you had to make a decision, a deadline, if you will. The other reason is that later this week, we don't know exactly when, but it's close, the service time, NBA service time, that is, of Daniel House's current two-way contract, the Rockets' current starter at small forward, hashtag greenhouse effect, will be up. And so for the Rockets to keep him at the NBA level, and as you're starting three, of course, that's what they want to do, then they've got to create a roster spot. So there are two advantages to the MCW trade as the Rockets did it. They save on the luxury tax for a guy who has not been a rotation player for nearly the entire year, and they create a roster spot to keep a guy whose service time on his existing deal, the two-way, is about up. And then once they convert House, which is inevitability, considering how well he's played, they will have another two-way contract, and we'll see what they want to do then as far as potentially signing another prospect that might help. Although I think initially, with the team as deep as they are currently, my guess is they sign a two-way who's more ticketed for the G League at the moment and is a longer-term play, would only get to the NBA level this year if there are major injuries or something unsuspected. The Rockets do, of course, have one other roster spot that is currently technically being used, but it's not providing value to the basketball team, and that's Carmelo Anthony. But the difference between Carmelo and Michael Carter-Williams, Carmelo has a fully guaranteed deal. So today, July 7th, was not an inflection point as far as if you keep him on the roster beyond today, there would be some sort of additional financial penalty. At this point, there's no clear incentive unless the Rockets desperately need to sign someone for the Rockets to move on from Melo. If nothing else, Melo's a useful piece at about $2.5 million that you could use to combine salaries to the trade deadline. I mean, between, say, Marquise Chris and Carmelo Anthony, that gets you to $6 million right there, which is not insignificant. Guys, they're not playing for you, but potentially could bring in a difference maker, someone that's not making near the bottom, which is very difficult to, you know, if you're fishing at the bottom of the barrel, to get anyone that's going to be a difference maker on a team that's expected to contend. Well, between Marquise Chris and Carmelo Anthony, you can potentially bring in a difference maker at the deadline without even having to dip into your Brandon Knight contract, which, as explained of late, I don't think the Rockets want to give up unless it's a clear upgrade, because Knight, as an expiring salary this summer, could be very useful for the Rockets and bigger trade offers down the line. So anyway, based on the partial guarantee, MCW had effectively a deadline of Monday. Melo does not. Melo sticks around in name only because they could use him theoretically to match salaries. Or if he finds a taker, which he has not yet, and it's been well over a month, of course the Rockets, I think, would do him a solid. But at this point, since no team is ready to take him, the Rockets can buy their time and see if they need to use his salary down the line. It's a pretty good setup for the time being to have a salary that's not insignificant that you can use, and expiring that is, so it's certainly not going to be seen as a negative asset around the league that can help your math at the trade deadline. But with NCW gone, the next step as far as the near term, because the trade deadline, Melo, all that stuff, that's close to a month away. That's early February. What's happening in the next few days, the Rockets are going to convert Daniel House into a real contract with the roster spot they now have open with letting Michael Carter-Williams go. And again, the Bulls didn't trade for him because they're keeping him. They immediately waived him. They just took a cash payment for the Rockets and released him because effectively whatever they're giving up, it's almost compensated for by the cash payments they're getting from the Rockets. And even though the Bulls, to make a trade work, they're sending a second-round pick to the Rockets. Well, it's so heavily protected that it's unlikely to ever convey. So basically, the Rockets ditched MCW just to move him. So there's a couple things that are going to happen. Number one, they're going to convert House. And beyond that, House's two-way will be used to bring in someone else. The two-way, and it could even be Joe Chi again, I don't think that's going to be an impactful player for this season. That's going to be more of a project. House, he already is an impactful player. So keeping him, that's certainly a big deal. The only question, which we're going to find out in the next few days, is will he take a three-year deal or will he take the minimum? Effectively, what the debate is, the Rockets do have their mid-level exception, most of it available, because they didn't spend it this summer. They've used small portions on Isaiah Hartenstein and Gary Clark. And if you use your mid-level exception rather than the minimum exception to sign someone like Daniel House, then you can sign them for 3 years. That's what the Rockets would prefer. For an aging team that's already in the luxury tax, the best thing, and look at Denver, how many cheap, cost-controlled young players they have. For the Rockets, getting their MLE for last summer and largely spending it on, they'd still have some left, but even if they don't spend it all, just getting the likes of Clark, Hartenstein, and Daniel House on cheap labor deals for 3 years, that's a win for the Rockets, a team that needs to get cheaper and younger. That's important. So, for the Rockets as a whole, I certainly think it's in their advantage as someone that wants the team to do well for House to take that deal. However, it's not a guarantee that he does because certainly the Rockets would be offering close to the minimum and it's very short term, but at least for the past 2-3 weeks, House's play has been better than minimum level. It's entirely possible that he bets on himself and says, hey, I'll just take the minimum deal and I'll go into restricted free agency this summer. The important thing for the Rockets is that even in that scenario, it's not like Luke Bamute, it's not like Austin Rivers, it would be restricted free agency, so the Rockets would be able to match any outside offer. So long term, it's not like if he signs for the minimum that he's likely to leave after the year, the Rockets would still have his rights as a restricted free agent. And ultimately, that's why I bet he ends up taking the three-year deal, if I had to gamble on it, because the other scenario, even if he really wants to bet on himself, thinks he'll continue to earn playing time and play well, even if the best case scenario plays out, and that's far from a guarantee on a team that's as good and as deep as the Rockets are, even if everything pans out, he'd still be a restricted free agent, and that would drive down his value in the summer, because as we've seen time and time again, teams around the league, they know the Rockets won't let a player like that get away, and so they won't want to commit the money because they know the Rockets will match anyway. So it's highly doubtful that he would want to go that route, in my opinion. My guess, especially if he feels good about the system fit, and I think he does, is that he would take the three-year deal. It's possible that it could be team-friendly for the Rockets if he continues this level of play, although it's a small sample size, it could just as easily go the other way. My guess is that for a guy who, entering this year, did not even have a single NBA contract, and just a month ago passed through waivers. Any team in the league could have claimed it, and they didn't. To me, even if it's close to the minimum, a three-year deal is a pretty good deal for him when you consider the grand scheme of things and how small of a sample size it is. So my guess is that that's what happens. I hope it does, because I believe in Daniel House, and getting him on a cheap three-year deal would be great for this team. He's the kind of young, cheap labor the Rockets need to fill out this roster around their expensive core for the time being. But ultimately, we're going to find out over the next few days because he is going to have that choice. And if he is, and his agent want to bet on his potential, certainly there's a case for where if he continues to play this well, especially in the big stage in the playoffs, he could earn a bit more in the offseason. It's just with him being a restricted free agent, I think that definitely decreases the odds a bit. Whatever the case, though, as far as this season, Daniel House is sticking with the Rockets. With the trade of Michael Carter-Williams, they have the roster spot, and now we just wait on exactly what the terms of his deal are. It should be happening at some point this week, whether he takes a portion of the MLE and signs for 3 years, or whether he takes a minimum deal and is here for this season and then wants to basically make his bet on restricted free agency in the summer and maybe getting a bit richer deal then. Regardless, though, this will do it, well, at least until we get House's contract. We'll discuss it a little bit more, but basically that's just my primer of what to look for on that front the remainder of the week. As far as today's show, I don't want to dwell on it too much because at the end of the day, look, the Rockets, they've won 12 of 14, and they won by double digits even without Chris Paul and Eric Gordon over a very, very good Denver team on Monday night. So to me, that's what the focus should be on, and that's where I'll leave it here as we wrap up our post-game podcast. As always, thanks so much to you guys for listening. If you want more content before our next episode, which, barring some other off-court news, probably won't be until Wednesday's post-game show after the Rockets-Bucks game, the best place to get that analysis in the interim is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, simply my name. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget, we've got a Locked On NBA Net Twitter and Instagram handle, curated feeds for all of our experts across the NBA that cover teams just the same way I do here in Houston. So if you want to see the Milwaukee coverage, both on their team and what they had to say about the Rockets, before and after Wednesday's big game, Harden, Giannis, the MVP showdown at Toyota Center, then yeah, check out the Locked On NBA Net feeds on Twitter and Instagram. Also, if you have not subscribed to this podcast already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, all the places that you would think of, because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got ideal distribution, so subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's how you can become really a big boost to me as a host of this program by boosting our subscriber figures and those reviews. That's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you're interested in becoming an advertiser yourself and helping out me even more and potentially your own business, lockonrockets@gmail.com is the email address. We've got some great introductory specials and that address beyond just advertising. If you've got questions about the team, suggestions for the show, don't hesitate to reach out. I would absolutely love to hear from you. One final note as we finish up today's episode, you can now tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Rockets and get our most recent episodes. So if you got a smart speaker for Christmas or if you use voice assistant providers, yeah, just say play podcast Locked On Rockets. In addition to our usual platforms, then those networks should be able to find our most recent episodes as well. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center Monday night. Rockets 125, Nuggets 113. Rockets, they improved to 23-16 on the year. They've won 9 consecutive times against the Nuggets, 10 straight times this season at home, and 12 of their last 14 overall. How sweet it is. What a great time it is. Despite the slow start to the year, it's finally paying off. If you're a Rockets fan, if you're the type of diehard that listens to this podcast, it's finally paying off because this is a really, really fun time to support this basketball team. So as always, thanks for listening. Please tell a friend so that we can take in even more people for this great ride ahead. And come back soon and check out more episodes, starting with Wednesday's game, Bucks-Rockets at Toyota Center. Whatever happens, we'll break it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.